From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is John Burcham, better known as Symbionic. The Austin, Texas-based producer specializes in a variety of bass music and has been steadily building up his name through high-profile remixes and high-powered live shows. Through the Glitch Mob, he was introduced to Charity Water, an organization dedicated to bringing clean and accessible drinking water to people in developing nations. With his partner, Jesse Breda, at Gravitas Recordings, the pair hit up some of their best buddies in the EDM industry like Govinda, Minnesota, SPL, Gladkill, Sugarpill, and so many more to contribute tracks to the Neurovation compilation. 100% of sales of the record will go directly to Charity Water. The album will be out on September 25th and includes Luminous from today's guest, Symbionic.
John, you're on the program this week to talk about a big new charity compilation you're putting out, but for the benefit of our audience and your fans, I'd like to dig into your own sonic history, if we could. I'd like to explore how you became the artist you are today. Were you a musical kid? Did you grow up playing in high school band or orchestra, or did you approach it from a completely different place?
I didn't grow up playing music, so I started at a bit of a disadvantage, but I was always a big music fan, and I was always really into technology. So as technology and music sort of started to grow together more and more, I started experimenting with programs and different things, and I've since taught myself music theory and taught myself synthesis, and here I am today.
When did production come along, or was it strictly DJing that initially inspired you?
DJing came after the fact for me. I realized that I needed a way to play the songs that I was making. I started making just little simple hip-hop beats early in high school after a friend, you know, showed me Fruity Loops. Was the very first audio workstation that I ever used. And it was a number of years later that I got back into it and took a much more serious approach after high school.
Was it then hip-hop outright that was your first introduction to synthesized beats? Did you move quickly from there into, say, house or whatever the popular form or genre of electronic music was at the time, perhaps drum and bass? What sort of angles were you hitting production from?
So I grew up in Arkansas, and in Arkansas, it's not exactly a cultural hotbed as far as music goes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, growing up, I didn't really have a context for electronic music as something that was different. I did never get the sort of behind-the-scenes view on how hip-hop was made or how pop music, you know, was made or any of those things. So in high school, you know, hip-hop was my first introduction to actually using technology to make beats and have an outlet to make music, which sort of from there I got really into trip-hop and down-tempo, found my way into some of the more like psychedelic down-tempo scenes that eventually led me to folks like early Bass Nectar and Tipper, and introduced me to bass music.
Did you instantly fall in love with bass music when you heard your first drop? Did it catch you off guard, or were you in it from the second you heard it?
It was definitely the first time that I heard, you know, something that I would call bass music. It wasn't necessarily, I didn't hear it on a big system or anything, so it wasn't such a mind-blowing experience, apart from the fact that I enjoyed it musically, beyond it being a type of music that was just sort of meant to blow people away. You know, I feel like a lot of bass music today lends itself to be played live and to facilitate that, like the experience of going to a show and seeing people perform their own music or other people's music that is meant to, you know, whether it be party music or just music to dance to or to enjoy publicly, you know, on a big system.
Your aesthetic seems, in a way, reactionary to the commercial dubstep that currently dominates the scene. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Somewhat. You know, as far as today's music, I really like a wide range of things. You know, many producers are very like to make one sort of style of music and that's their sound, but I pride myself on being able to, you know, at least attempting to take different genres that I enjoy and putting them together in my sets and in my own music and in ways that people might not expect.
I wonder, is there a formula that you try to avoid that you see maybe your contemporaries utilizing that either rubs you the wrong way because it's cheap or because, you know, the sound is, in your estimate, played out or anything like that? I mean, are you actively trying to avoid certain things when you're producing, or is it just that your creative muse steers you in a way that's maybe non-traditional of its own accord?
So I think that, you know, within itself, I don't necessarily hate any music for what it is. That's not to say that I don't have a preference for music that I like and don't like, but generally my motto is it's pretty simple. I try to listen to music that I do like and not listen to music that I don't like. As far as producing my own music, one big thing for me is that creatively I enjoy looking for new ways to not only express myself, but pursuing new avenues of music making and building upon things that producers before me have done. You know, even just something as simple of a reason as to keep myself entertained and interested in what I'm doing. I'm a big fan of music that captures a listener's attention instead of just being sort of a side note almost. So I think that's a driving force behind my music.
Meet me in outer space.
Remix of Stellar from Incubus right here on the UNTS podcast.
DJing became a necessity for you because your original productions were so in demand. People wanted to see you come out and play those live. Are you primarily using your sets as a vehicle for your productions, or are you using the music of others? Are you at 50%, 90%, 10%? What's the breakdown if you are incorporating the music of others into your performances?
So I wouldn't say I started DJing necessarily because I was in high demand or anything like that, but I realized that if I did want to share my music with people in a way that was more than just over the internet or you know, maybe burning someone a CD, that I had to mix music together in a way that is enjoyable or inviting for a listener, you know, either at home or in a club, festival environment. I've also had experience DJing, not only, you know, being booked necessarily because of my own music, but, you know, because I was a DJ and I played clubs that were, apart from the nights that I played, maybe more of like a top 40 or a more mainstream dance music type of environment. And so I learned a lot about reading crowds, mixing other people's music as an art form. What I try to do is take, you know, these two sides of me. I really enjoy mixing music by itself, you know, apart from the side of me that makes music. And so I try to bring those two things together in my sets now. I generally play probably about a third of my own music, and it kind of waxes and wanes depending on, you know, sometimes I might not have so much new music ready. Sometimes I might be in the mood to play some older stuff, or, you know, I like being very dynamic in my sets.
Certainly, certainly. And on that live show tip, how was the Rusty show? You played in Chicago with Rusty and Nightwave. That had to have been a thrill.
Yeah, that was excellent. Played at Smart Bar. Shout out to Wolfpack Productions. I also played last night with Rusty in Denver. Both shows went well. Definitely always fun for me to, because I have such a wide taste in music, I enjoy not only playing some, you know, more what you might call banger music, but I really appreciate the opportunity to play it a night with someone like Rusty, who makes such listenable music, you know, outside of a club or something. You would still want to totally listen to his music, and being able to play a set around vibes that are different than, you know, what I may do normally, I feel like it helps, you know, it pushes my boundaries. It makes me a better artist overall.
Are you finding that where you are with your production, where you are with shows that you're ending up on, that you have to cater your sets? Or at this point, have you cultivated enough of an image or at least a sonic signature to where people are expecting a symbiotic set?
That's a really interesting question. I feel like both of the things you mentioned are pretty true for me. I feel a bit like a chameleon sometimes. I like to be able to fit on a bill that I'm in, but because of my wide taste, I really enjoy, you know, playing sets that I can pull a listener in that might not normally be into the type of music that I make or type of set that I would play, you know, through the sort of artistic form of DJing. You know, throughout the journey of my set, I'm able to sometimes, you know, bring in pieces of something that they may be familiar with in order to gain the crowd's trust, and from there be able to take them wherever I feel like going.
We'll be right back.
Pound for Pound and Starkey's Resident 27 from the Neurovation compilation.
I feel like your career got a kickstart, and a lot of your fans were probably first introduced to you through your Drive It Like You Stole It remix for the Glitch Mob. It really set you off on a path. Tell me a little bit about that process and you know, the results that you reaped from that, that I imagine are still paying off to this day.
So that was the Glitch Mob's Drive It Like You Stole It remix contest. Ended up receiving runner-up. I received second place on the votes overall, with my friend Mind Elixir was the winner for the voting portion of that contest. And definitely, that was one of my first tracks a number of years ago to gain a lot of support from many different people. I think 2 years later now, it has something like 40,000 plays on SoundCloud. And I'm definitely really grateful for that opportunity. It connected me with the Glitch Mob, who are absolutely amazing people through and through. So yes, that was an amazing opportunity. And you know, the process of making that remix, it was one of the first tracks that I produced where it felt like the track almost produced itself. You know, I was there sort of just as the medium, and you know, on working with it, it came out very fluidly. I didn't have to sort of fight an uphill battle by any means. I definitely feel, and in talking to other producers, I think that's sort of a common thing that happens when a song that you make, you know, one of the producer's own favorite songs, and many times, you know, what turns out to be a quote-unquote hit among the fans.
Do you feel like that was a turning point in your production aesthetic? Had you reached some sort of technical breakthrough, or really because you were so inspired by the stems and by the project and by this, you know, almost you could call it a vision that you received and you were acting as the medium for, did you feel like your subsequent productions were colored by that or fueled by it, or did you make an extra effort to do something different? I'm wondering, because I imagine, you know, once you create a song that is a hit like you did, the common reaction would be to try and replicate that, or at least, you know, try and bottle lightning, you know, and exploit it if you could.
Sure. You know, I think that at least along my little relatively short journey here, it's been about, you know, working for my present day inspiration instead of, you know, my goal with making music isn't necessarily to be the next big artist. You know, I have so much respect for people like Bass Nectar, for example, that tour 9 months out of the year. It's really unreal. And while I really enjoy playing music for people, I don't think that I could devote so much of my time to touring constantly to gain, you know, some giant notoriety. Basically, that's not what drives me. It's always nice, you know, when someone leaves like a sincere comment or post something that they, you know, one of my songs maybe made their day or something. That really drives me more than any sort of widespread notoriety or
money, perhaps.
Sure. Or any desire to sort of make music purely for the sake of maybe money or fame or whatever it is.
Symbionic remix of the Glitch Mob's Drive It Like You Stole It.
Tell me about Gravitas, the label you're currently working with.
Yes, so I work with Gravitas Recordings, Gravitas is also a creative collective outside of being solely a label to release music. And within that collective, there's not only music producers, but graphic designers and VJs and photographers and agents and managers and bloggers. You know, there's all these people that have come together, some being more involved than others, to build a network where, you know, of course, people are definitely stronger when they unite around a common goal. And it definitely helps to have the resources of so many amazingly talented people just a couple clicks of a mouse away. You know, I've been working with Gravitas for about a year now, and it's been really excellent. The future for Gravitas is looking really great. I help with its promotion aspect, the A&R aspect of the label, and it's really rewarding to see a sort of the other side of music. And definitely really looking forward to the next releases that Gravitas has in the pipeline.
And along with that, you've sort of geared the creative efforts of not only the Gravitas collective, but a lot of your friends around the industry for a new charity compilation. First of all, how did you get involved with Charity Water?
Yeah, it happened sort of by chance. Beretta from the Glitch Mob had introduced Jesse Breda, who is the founder of Gravitas, introduced us to Charity Water a while back when he had done basically a fundraising event for Charity Water for his birthday. And the idea behind Charity Water, I think, is really something that's very simple, and it's not such a, you know, sort of abstract idea. You know, there's some charities out there that are kind of like, oh, well, we want to save the rainforest, or, you know, so the idea is so large that, of course, I'm sure that those charities make a difference, but it's not necessarily so personal for people. Charity Water, what they do is they work with villages and developing and rural nations and drill wells, install water filtration systems, ultimately with the goal of providing not only clean water, but easily accessible water for people, in the hopes that it will start a chain reaction for these folks. You know, for example, if a woman of the family would have to travel multiple hours every day to get water for their family, you know, now she might be able to just walk 5 minutes to the center of the village to get water for the day. Then that frees up time that she could spend maybe going to school or learning a trade. You know, the possibilities are very endless.
Absolutely. And you said that the goals themselves with Charity Water are, you know, within grasp. It's not some nebulous organization where they take your money and you're not really sure where it goes. You know, the results are very tangible.
Sure. And Charity Water, one of the big things that they do is they show you exactly where your money went. So you can donate, say $5,000, which is the cost of drilling a single well, and they'll show you where the well is that they drilled with that money. They show you the people that you've helped through that. And I think that's so, you know, it's inspiring to see and hear those stories.
So tell me then about the Neurovation compilation. This is the actual focal point of this charity effort. Who are some of the artists getting on board?
So with the Neurovation charity compilation, we have an insanely talented lineup. Edit from the Glitch Mob, Starkey, Craddy, Grammatic, Minnesota, Govinda, Sugarpill and Gladkill from Headtron family, Unlimited Gravity, Gravitas Artists, One for All, and the Digital Connection are also on board, Knight Riders, really, really solid group of people. And 100% of the proceeds from the release will go straight to Charity Water. We're really excited about that.
And I understand there's also a contest running concurrently with the lead up to the release.
Sure, the UNCE has been very gracious in helping us host this contest. You can, you know, simply by entering your email address, you can enter to win a Livid Instruments OHM RGB MIDI controller, as well as signed merch from the Glitch Mob, Craddy, and Starkey, and some UNCE Gravitas gear as well.
Certainly, certainly. And the album comes out September 25th. what would be the best way for people to find it, donate? Is there a possibility that if people are so motivated, they can, you know, give a little bit extra or even find more information to see how they could help Charity Water in other ways?
Sure. So on September 25th, the album will be available at all major digital music retailers, but you can go to gravitasrecordings.com, and there you can not only pre-order the compilation and preview it, but enter the contest, as well as we have a campaign set up through Charity Water where you could donate, you know, even without getting the compilation. So we're really excited about the entire project. Folks can not only win some gear from cool artists and get some great music, but also help out a really amazing cause.
Absolutely. And if fans of yours out there are hungry for some live performances, any upcoming shows that that fans should know about?
Sure. So I have a number of fall tour dates right now through September, October, and November, across the country in different spots, the West Coast and Midwest especially. Definitely, you can find all my music online at symbionicmusic.com, including a ton of free music and mixtapes, as well as my released albums.
That's fantastic. John Burcham, Symbionic, we're looking forward to the compilation, looking forward to seeing you out on the road, and we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about Charity Water, and hopefully, you know, down the line we'll be making a difference.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
Coagulate, a brand new one from Symbionic, closing out the show for this week. Keep up with everything Symbionic, including news and tour dates, at theunts.com/symbionic. Go to gravitasrecordings.com on September 25th to find out how you can grab the Neurovation compilation featuring Kratty, Starkey, Grammatic, Edit from the Glitch Mob, and so many more. 100% of proceeds go to Charity Water. And check out our contest page, because we're giving away some great Unt swag in addition to a bunch of the prizes you can win with the package. So this is a great cause. Please join in. Please visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and now tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unts podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theunts.com. Join the conversation at The Unts Podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.